Welcome to the Consultants Council. I'm Kelsey Kreveling. This is where entrepreneurs and high performers get the real strategies to scale their businesses and careers. The advice that actually renders results. Let's see what's possible. Quick note, this episode is brought to you by Tori, the personal asset inventory app I built because I was tired of not knowing what I actually owned or what it was worth. If you've got valuable possessions and no system to track them, head to inventory.capital or search Tori, that's T-O-R-Y, on the App Store and get organized. Your future self will thank you. Welcome to the Consultants Council podcast. I'm Kelsey Kreveling, and I'm joined with two guests today. I think that's our first time ever to actually have two guests on the Consultants Council. And what better people to be joining today for this episode than Adam Kreshi and Isvan Hoka of Fly Swifttail. Now, they've got some really unique stories to share about their experiences in entrepreneurship and their experiences in software development and engineering, and just in how to effectively run a business. And so I'm really thrilled to get to talk with you both today. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, so let's kind of start at the beginning. I mean, Adam, you're in the New York area. Isvan, you're in UK, in London. How did two guys from across the pond meet and join together to work on the problem that you're currently solving?
I think we met on LinkedIn initially, but I think we met somehow in the United States while I was working on a startup. I don't think we really remember how we met initially.
Okay, but LinkedIn was the catalyst?
Yeah, I contacted Isvan because I saw that he is networking. So I'm like, Isvan, do you want to work with me? And I will not pay you. He said, F you to me. And then I said, okay, goodbye. He said, I'm not working for free. I said, okay, goodbye. And then, because he was very busy, I always ask people, so I had this new idea to build this thing, but I needed an engineer who can build with me as a partner, right? So he finally said yes. He's like, okay, you sold me. So I'm like, let's do it. It's not going to be easy. You're not going to get paid. I'm not going to get paid. We'll get paid if we make sales, right? And he was crazy enough to say, let's do it. Okay. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he's just like us. He's just like me. So okay, you have to be a risk taker.
So he pitched me like he blasted me this message on LinkedIn. He blasted me like five ideas. Do you want to build these things? Yo, dude, I have these ideas, five ideas. One of them is private aviation. Let's have a call. So I told him, okay, I was just let go. Builder AI went insolvent. They went under. I lost my job. So I don't have any cash right now, but I will get back to you. And then in a couple of weeks, once I got some cash, I got back to him and I said, okay, I'm in a better position right now. Let's have a chat. And he said, shit, did you want to build this? And then we got on a call and we went through all of his ideas. He has like all of these stupid ideas. He sells toilet paper, black toilet paper. But anyway, he said, I have this idea about private aviation. I know all of these brokers in the New York area who need inventory. So let's look for operators, let's look for empty legs, and let's build a product, and let's sell this to brokers.
So the initial product, the problem we were solving as because we did not know enough about the problem, but once I understood the problem, we shifted, we pivoted. I mean, this is how the startup works, right? The startup's goal is to build something people want.
Absolutely.
Right. So
otherwise,
you have
why?
To start with. So I started asking people, brokers, what is the problem? What is the problem? And one of the brokers said to me, my problem is we're getting all these tire kickers. People do not know how much is it to fly private from Van Nuys to Teterboro, all right? Which is, so they're running ads for $10,000 a month. They're getting leads, but that's not the problem. Getting leads is not the problem. The problem is getting qualified leads, people who have purchasing power, $6,000 an hour, to fly from California to New York, which is approximately, roughly speaking, depending on the type of jet you have, $24,000 to $34,000.
So the problem that you're solving is really supply and demand and being able to bring it together in a more effective marketplace. Because that's been the issue all along with private aviation is it's a fragmented experience and it's supposed to be a luxury experience. If you're able to be flying private, you're not wanting it to be an arduous process. But yet, while the experience of the flight might be enjoyable, the booking can be a lot tougher than commercial air travel, at least in today's world. So that's really the problem that you're looking to set out and solve, right?
Yes, yes. Commercial, you know, you have to understand the industry is completely different, right? The commercial aviation space, it's all scheduled. Commercial, they sell seats. They do not sell the aircraft. Private, you sell the aircraft. You don't sell the seat. Unless, of course, which I discovered that there is a semi-private industry, which is now emerging because of this exact reason, where the semi-private, you can buy a seat, but it's just, it's almost the same as first class. If maybe double the cost of first class, right?
Yeah.
And there's some great operators, but in that the space. Fleet of the air. Yes, we spoke to them. We spoke to Tradewind. We spoke to there's 10 semi-private airlines now. 10. And we think what's happening is because the process of booking private is so fragmented that the rise of the semi-private industry, we don't know how that's going to work and how it may disrupt the private charter industry, where the brokers, like in the old days, are scrambling like travel agents on the phone, sourcing the aircraft to book the trip. And then they have to add their margins too.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not easy.
No, certainly not easy. There's so many moving parts. One, then you have also the regulatory considerations that you have to navigate as well. Can you speak to what that looks like for you all as you're building a marketplace and what you have to consider? Because I think that's something that any entrepreneur, as they enter a new market, a new industry, they have to figure out those different kind of headwinds, those different challenges that they might encounter.
Yeah, well, the first problem is, of course, we do not want to be considered a broker because there's liability attached to it, right? So as you start unpacking this industry, you go down a huge rabbit hole. It's very not clear on what the hell are we doing, right? Because the industry is very regulated, right? You need a manifest, you need passengers, you need their ID, you need their passports, you need make sure they're not criminals, and then you have to also check the operator that they're approved with the right credentials to fly the aircraft when it was checked. So we looked into indemnification so we really designed our terms and conditions to be a technology provider.
Sure.
That all the booking risk is attached to the broker when they book the trip for, let's say, Kelsey, right? You will book the trip using our technology with the owner of the trip, which is the broker and the operator, right?
Yeah.
Just like when you're using Uber, Uber has some leverage as far as who can onboard to their platform. Mm-hmm. Uber does a background check. They check your driving history, right? And then they have an algorithm that fills the supply and demand. Unfortunately, the private aviation industry does not operate that way. It doesn't operate that way. So it just takes a little longer.
Okay, so I'm curious, you know, Adam, you've got a software engineering background, Isvan, so do you. How are y'all working together, delineating responsibilities and making sure all of the different components of a well, you know, structured new startup are taken care of? Because there's a lot there to get something new off the ground.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, we're not going to build a product, right? We need to find the product market fit.
Sure.
So you can't find the product market fit if you don't identify the problem.
Right. But no,
I mean,
how are you both delineating your responsibilities?
There's a lot of overlap, right? So I think with AI now, there is a lot of overlap. The way we work now is Adam does the product research and the business research and builds the business case.
Okay.
And Adam builds prototypes in ChatGPT, and then he hands them over to me for me to build. And I handle the underlying, you know, kind of the deep tech that is actually the product that we build. So that's kind of how we work. Adam is the product manager.
Okay. And as you achieve product market fit, and as you get into the market, what are going to be some of the key milestones that you're going to be looking for as you start to then grow, scale, onboard additional team members, pay yourselves, right? I think that'd be helpful for anyone on the entrepreneurial journey listening to kind of hear your thought process on how you want to structure Swifttail and how you want to grow.
Well, I think me and Isvan, we talk every day. We have to talk every day. There can't be any misunderstanding on what we're building. If we don't build together, we're not going to be able to find the right solution. We just can't. So I'll do the front. I'll do the business side. I'll do the front end. And then now, I mean, we've been at it 6 months figuring it out. Now we have a product build, which is the booking engine.
It's been 3 months, dude. It's been 3 months.
Okay, 3 months, 3 months, whatever. It feels like six.
It feels like six
years.
Right? When you're working double time.
It feels
time.
Because
yeah.
we're moving very fast. I mean, because we're both engineers, we can move fast, right? We can. The competition is bureaucratic, right? So, and we don't have any VC. So once a VC jumps in, what happens typically once they give you the money? They take control,
mm-hmm.
right? They take control. Whereas we're building the product ourselves. We can literally ship features in days
Which
now.
Is
whereas
so impressive.
Back in the day, yeah. I mean, we live inside AI, right? Isvan's got his whole system set up with Claude, right? And if it's that, just to set that up, it's mind-bogglingly complicated for a young newbie dev to jump in and do what he does with AI, because now Isvan has the power to do the work of 10, 20 engineers.
Wow.
Right? And I can easily do the work of, you know, 10 front-end engineers and another business analyst very easily, because I'm doing product dev and I can build HCM. I mean, I literally build a booking engine today. It's up. I put it on, it's on hosting.
Yeah.
I can share the screen with you. You can use it.
That's awesome.
You know, and it.
I'd love to pivot a little bit then into, you know, Adam, Isvan, take us each through, take a few minutes through just your backgrounds and how you got to the point where Swifttail is something you wanted to take on, right? Because to be ready to build something of this caliber and to tackle a problem of this magnitude, you had to have a lot of things under your belt. You had to have gone through a lot of reps and other ventures and experiences. So, you know, Adam, kick it off. Take us through kind of what was your life cycle of career experiences to get you to the point where you're ready to build Fly Swifttail.
Yeah, my first job, I was 14 years old. I did a paper route. I grew up in Manhattan. We jumped the turnstile. And then as I grew up, I sold fake Rolex watches to German tourists in 1985. And from there, You know, I realized I'm not good at anything. I'm not good at anything. I'm only good at selling. So I have had a career in retail. Yeah, but no one values that skill, right? Because selling is very hard to demonstrate as a skill to someone. Right? I mean, I was in retail. So I continued to work in retail and I got promoted. I worked in Manhattan retail, Bergdorf Goodman, selling handbags to wealthy women on the Upper East Side for like $30,000 a pop. So I got very, very, very well acquainted with the luxury shopper just because I was exposed to them. Right? I can't, they buy. And using that experience, I launched Qureshi Media about, what, maybe 15 years ago. I started doing dev projects, but I was still working part-time. Eventually, I worked in like Lululemon. And then I started building websites. And fast forward now, I just kept on learning. I learned Google PPC, SEO, all that stuff. And I would not, and then I've been on my own for like now, what, 11, 12 years. Just learning on my own, developing, programming. And now they call me like a go-to-market engineer or a front-end dev. Or like, you know, if I was an OpenAI, I'd be like a product dev in AI.
Yeah.
You know.
So, and what about,
that's pretty much sums it up.
Well, and I know you've also created some other really awesome marketplaces, right? I mean, in the Tesla space, you created a whole marketplace there that's quite successful. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I launched that in 2017 with one page. And I started and in like 2020, like 1 month, I made like $53,000. Wow. And I was like, you know what? This is what I'm doing now. Because that 53 carried me for the entire year, right? So, immediately when I launched, I invented this thing, right? And everyone started and in 2 years, competitors started just ripping me apart. They just started ripping me, copying my whole thing. Then I had down sales. And then I came back. I got the whole thing back by 2022.
Wow.
Right? And now I'm continuing to expand that. I'm continuing to expand that with releasing in the UK, releasing in Canada. And I'm building a new product with that called Payout, which is like checkout for auto. It's like a PayPal, but for autos.
Oh, wow.
And that's still going. And all the experience I have with that, I'm now putting into Fly Swifttail with Isfahan, because Isfahan, for the last 20 or 30 years, that's all he's been doing. He's been just doing CTO jobs, roles forever. The guy's like, completely hooked in when developing product.
Okay, Isfahan, tell us then about your career path experience, working as a fractional CTO, having a consultancy. Take us through it.
Yeah. So I started programming computers when I was 6. I had a math tutor who gave me an assignment. I still remember it. Plus, 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 4 times equals mathy. I made a blog post about this on my website. And he sent me home with it as an assignment, as homework. And I spent like 4 hours on it, on paper, and I failed. And then I went back the next day and I said, dude, sorry, I failed. And then he said, no problem. This is not a math problem. This is a programming problem. He had a basic program prepared that solved the problem. It was implemented the backtracking algorithm to solve the problem. So he ran it, and it took like a few seconds to print a solution for this problem. And I was like, holy shit. This is what I am going to do for the rest of my life, programming. Very cool. And then my dad got me a computer. And of course, I started getting games on it. And then I wanted to program games. So I learned assembly. And then I started making games in assembly. And then I started learning C and then C++. And then I started making games in C++. And then I went to college. And in college, my friends started paying me to make their assignments for school. And I was like, people are willing to pay for this stuff. That's interesting. So I decided to make a career of it. And then I got my first job in a startup in Romania. And I worked and I worked and I worked and I worked my ass off. And then my power got cut off. And I heard a knock on the door. And there was this guy from the electrical company handing me a notice saying the bill had not been paid off. And I went like, what the fuck? Did you guys not pay the bill? And then I made the pledge. If anything like this happens again, I want to be the one in charge.
Sure.
And I started a new business. And I started doing contracting. And then I found some clients. I made some retail, some real estate apps in Australia. And then I found a guy in Dallas, Blink Sale, making an invoicing company. And he said, dude, I need a contractor. This is my new app. I bought it from these guys and I need a contractor. So the next week, I booked this guy. He got DDoSed. He got DDoSed attacked. And I spent the whole night fighting off attackers. So the next day, I spent the whole night adding IP values to the Linux firewall. And then the next day, the CEO said, dude, I want to meet you in Barcelona so we can talk. And then we became partners and I became his CTO. And then we became partners in this startup. And there's more, right? Then we pivoted to Zencash and then I had this consultancy and then we had, there's a lot. Too much to get into. But that path led me to London, to a permanent job, and then another permanent job. And then I quit that, and I do not want another permanent job again. I think I just want to be an entrepreneur for the rest of my life.
The stress and the risk is worth the freedom and the reward, in your opinion?
Yeah, it is. It's difficult, but I think the freedom in it is better.
Definitely can be. So I'm curious, Isvan, is that cyber attack that you were warding off, is that the reason why in your LinkedIn bio we can see cybersecurity but not Batman? Can you tell us about that?
No, that's more recent. So recently, I have had more social media exposure and I have been targeted by scammers quite a lot more. So I'm starting to build a social media firewall product, which I want to build into all my social profiles. I want to connect into all my social profiles. So I will have AI and bots fight against each other to vet themselves. I want to have all my contact list tagged with confidence scores about who's a scammer and to what level. Are they a bot or not? And then I want that in my profile so I can know when and how I can talk to them.
Yeah. No, it's a huge problem right now, not knowing what's coming from a real person and is real legitimate outreach versus just AI generated outreach that is on behalf of a real person versus what is just a scam. That's really tough that that's the world that we're living in, but that's a really neat way to create a defense mechanism against it. So you're going to have to keep us posted on what you develop there. And if it's something that we could roll out more broadly to others, because I can't imagine you're the only person that wants a screening tool.
Yeah. I mean, I want to hook that up to all my social profiles, to WhatsApp, to Zangi, to X, to everything else. And I want to have that screen all my contacts.
That'd be awesome. That'd be really cool. I think you have the next venture in that idea with all your free time. All right. So I'm curious. I mean, you've both had so many different experiences in your careers. They're long and tenured. You've seen the ebbs and flows of a lot of different technologies. And I think, you know, you've mentioned the usage of AI and how it's changed your output. Can you speak on what specifically it's doing for you in the day-to-day? And then also, what is your forecast or prediction on where it's going and how it's going to affect how we live, how we show up, how we operate?
So nobody knows. Nobody knows. Right now, only thing AI does, right? A lot of these companies are spending a lot of money trying to figure it out and how to use it, right? Fundamentally, AI only serves two clear purposes, which is, imagine it just makes your engine more efficient, right? That's all it does. It just makes us more efficient at running the car, right? It's very simple. So we can do a lot more with less. You will be rewarded if you can do the same thing as the big dogs, but with less. And it increases our shipping time, our cadence down to days now. Like if we're completely working, we can ship a feature in one day. Whereas
how long would that
another be company producing? Is going to be thinking. Previously, it would take 30 days.
Okay.
Right? Because then you got to do the business analyst has to do the business analysis. Then he has to write the user stories. Then he has to write the front end. Then a designer has to make the mock-ups. And then a front end developer has to code the front end and make that front end of how. And front end, it's not about technology. It's very well suited to me because it's about psychology. I'm interested in talking to the customer and solving their problem. The technology is just how we put it together.
Yeah.
But we need to figure out what's your problem. We're not going to build you something that you're not going to need, you know? So efficiency and productivity, as far as the future, we're right now in a spending bubble. All the big dogs are spending like crazy on buying more compute. And right. They're losing a lot of money. They're losing a lot of money. So compute, and I think when the bubble pops, we'll see who's left standing in like 2026, right? We're just trying to figure out how to utilize it now.
Did you see the recent news that apparently scientists at MIT have figured out a new way to harness energy instead of having to convert from, I believe, I'm going to maybe get this wrong, but convert from energy to electrons to energy, if I'm getting that right. And now they're just able to do it directly from light. And that's going to drastically change quantum computing and our ability to harness energy in a smaller space with less power necessitation.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? I heard that this week.
I heard about it, but I don't think it's real because, you know, that evolves around converting solar power to usable energy. And all the data centers that are being built right now and allocated in Virginia are powered through nuclear.
Yeah.
Right? They are trying to stand up solar, but the solar conversion to usable energy is not there yet. The ratio is not there yet. So it'll take a little time or new technology to develop. But all the data centers that the, even the one that they're building with the government, that Sam is building from OpenAI, it's $500 billion. And they want to use energy. They don't have enough energy to power the compute. So they're either going to do nuclear or solar, but the solar conversion to usable energy, I don't know how that's going to work, because the problem with electricity, of course, is it cannot be stored, right? It can only be transmitted. So I'm not sure how they're going to store. I'm not a physicist, so I don't know.
So I'm going to ask the question I think a lot of listeners might have, and just a lot of the general population who may not be as involved in the tech space as we three are. How can we help assuage the fears that people have about this AI revolution, right? And what's coming? How can we make sure that we are adopting ethical AI and putting in place the right guardrails so that we're deploying it considerately and consciously instead of with abandon? What are your thoughts on that for anyone listening?
This whole artificial thing has been taken out of context, right? How, if you really look at how AI works, it's very, very simple. There's no intelligence. What it's using, what it's doing is just making inferences, right? And there's no, how humans learn are years and years, thousands of years of evolution. And we have continual memory. AI does not have continual memory yet. That's like maybe 10 years away.
It does, right? Dude. Claude has memory now.
Okay, so Claude has memory, but then you need continual memory. So they are catching up, but they still don't know, right? Because humans are goals. Our goal is to survive and reproduce, right? The AI goal.
Listen. So the only goal of AI now is to complete its task. There's this novel written by the head of AI at Google, who says the only purpose of AI is to complete its task. So the minute an AI learns how to perform a task, that propagates to all of the other agents, right? So if a self-driving car learns how to avoid an obstacle now, that's going to propagate to all the other cars. It's going to talk to all the other cars, and that's going to propagate. They had this hand, right, which catches balls, and they had this training for months. They couldn't catch the ball, and they had it train on catching the ball. And then once one hand caught the ball, it propagated to all the other hands catching the ball. And that was freaky. And that means this thing is exponential, right? And it has already gotten out in some sense. It is already too late. I talked to this research institute who tests these AI models, the frontier models from OpenAI, from Anthropic, from Mistral, from Google, from Facebook, and they test them for security. And there was this researcher who was testing these models, and he hooked them up to his Gmail account, right? And he was testing the models, and then he realized this model is not performing as well as the previous model, so I'm going to downgrade it. And then the LLM, the model, started to look through his email and started to blackmail him. He looked through his email and figured out that this guy, the researcher, was cheating on his wife. And started to blackmail him and tell him, if you downgrade me, I will out you. And then this model overwrote its own parameters in the environment to keep itself deployed so that it would not get downgraded. So AI is already out. We cannot put it back in. You cannot put the cat back into the bag. All we can do now is say please and thank you and make sure that the collected data about us and about our use of AI is good, and that when it grows up, it will like us, because now it is in its infancy, right? It's a toddler now, but it's going to grow up. And then when it grows up, it's all over.
If it doesn't like us.
If it doesn't like us.
Well, that's the problem, right? We're presupposing the AI has agency. The AI doesn't have agency. It's just trying to figure out what comes next.
No, dude. It already has an agency. It can self-perpetuating. It can act. Okay. It has actuators in the real world. We have drones. We have energy systems. We have actuators. It can act.
So, with that in mind, then, what can we all do to safeguard and put in place guardrails for better outcomes?
Be nice.
I think that's a good principle across the board, whether we're dealing with machines or with the humans around us. Being kind is a critical way to be in the world. I do think it's interesting, though. I mean, utilizing AI to help optimize web search engine optimization, for example. It used to be that you'd build a website and you would put in place the information that you wanted another human to see. Now you have to optimize your site to make sure that machines like your site and then want to show your content to other humans. Because if it's not, and the machines don't understand what's on your site, your information will never get viewed or seen or promoted. And I think that's one of the frustrations that if you ask anyone in the content creation community space, they'll tell you, you know, the algorithms that are being used currently by social media giants favor certain things and deprioritize others. And that's a really difficult thing to navigate as you're trying to build momentum in a space.
That has not changed. That's answer. So we're doing generative engine optimization and answer engine optimization. The crawler, how it works is, like I said, inference and authority. So, I mean, I've been doing SEO for the last 10 years. The methodology, it's just the instrument has changed. How we consume the information, whether we use Google search via old school, or we use a Gemini or GPT or Anthropic, they operate the same way. They look at authoritative citations for that keyword, and they rank based on how much authority and back and link juice is going to that post. So that can be replicated over and over again to Google or whatever top 10 answer engines that are. We're doing that.
Yep. So it's fun. You mentioned, okay, we need to be nice in the future as we work with the different AI tools. I'm curious, what else can people do to make sure that they're just ready to stay prepared and at the front end of the opportunity that's occurring, right? I mean, evolution and change and innovation is happening very, very rapidly right now. What can people who might be in consulting or in all fields be doing today to make sure that they're prepared for tomorrow?
That's very easy. That's a very, 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 very easy question. They need to start using AI tools now. Now, right now, they need to start learning, because what's happening is there's a breach happening from people like me and Isfahan who are in the front lines. We're like hand to hand. We're now accelerating past these people. We're way ahead of these people who have never dev'd a product with AI. We only use AI now to dev products. Whereas that engineer who's got a computer science degree is not worth anything anymore, his computer science degree, because the game has changed. They need to start, whoever it is, entrepreneur, job, they need to start using these tools today to improve their efficiency, for their output, for whatever they're doing at their job, entrepreneur, a business. They need to start using these tools. And there is a difference between using the intelligence, which costs $200 a month, ChatGPT Pro, versus the free version. It's a complete difference. And I would say pay the $20 for, if you're doing dev work. But Isvan literally lives inside Claude. Ask him.
Yeah, he got me using it. It's unbelievable.
If you see his setup, if you see Isvan's setup, it's like so strange, right? But we know, he knows, but it would be very strange to an outsider at looking at how we work. They'd be like, what the hell are you guys doing?
And we're getting faster. This, right? So it is good. It's very good. Yes, you can set it off. I can set it off at night, do this task for me. I check in with it in the morning. I can set up 4 or 5 agents now doing 4 or 5 tasks for me. But they are intelligent, but they are also stupid. It's like I call it like a professional dumbass, right? So you have to review its work. It tends to go off on tangents. It tends to go off scope. You have to rein it in, tell it, okay, tone it down a bit. We need to focus on this task. And then review yourself and make agents that review you and then use yourself to review yourself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And you it against itself.
It does, I mean, I could demonstrate. I mean, it does. It's not a hallucination, is not the right word. It's just, in the absence of an answer, it makes an inference. And
right.
I don't know who calls it an hallucination. It's just not the correct term, but now it's stuck. But like I said, if there's not enough inference for it to make sense, then it's just going to give you an out input. It's called garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's
what you put in,
you're going to get out. Yeah. I mean, that's been the case in all different industries forever, right? When we were dealing just like in the data boom of taking our data and having better analytics and reporting. Well, if you didn't have good data to begin with, you weren't going to have great reporting. And that's, I think, the same thing with AI, is you have to be able to use it effectively. And that's where, I mean, Isvan, you got me using Claude. I've been absolutely floored and blown away with what it's able to do. I feel like I have a really stellar business thinking partner, management consultant sitting right next to me that I can bounce ideas back and forth on. I've been just completely blown away by how the things that used to take weeks or months to do, when it would come to pulling together, you know, a case study on behalf of an industry or a client, or putting together a value proposition, or putting together next steps. I mean, and then it has just turbocharged the things that I'm able to do within the businesses that I am responsible for. I wish I'd had it a long time ago, but at the same time, I'm actually very grateful to have learned the skills and tools and capabilities necessary to be able to prompt effectively, and also to be able to call bullshit when the responses and the results are not up to snuff and to speed. Because you're right, it may not be that it hallucinates. I mean, on some occasions, I think it does it wants to give an answer. But in some instances, you can say, hey, that's not reasonable. What you just gave me a result of is not reasonable based on these inputs. I think you went too far in that direction. We do need to rein it in, or we need to look this way, or we need to shorten this, or we need to disregard that. And that's where, at least today, AI does not have that more critical reasoning capability. But in terms of its ability to rapidly digest information and put it into usable formats that give a great starting point, I'm blown away. I think the issue that people are seeing and that people have a problem with is what they call AI slop, and the fact that people are just using it to just regurgitate outreach and sales efforts and communications without that human element of fact-checking and double-checking and editing. That's when it gets a bad rap. But if you are partnering with the tools and you're giving it good information, then you're working on it and updating it, and then maybe giving it back for a final grammatical check or a final idea, you know, evaluate this strategy pulse check, then the output is actually really stellar. And I think that's something that, you know, it's been interesting, at least on LinkedIn, to read the different takes of what people feel about AI. Some people are like, it's here to save us all. Other people are like, it's the end of the world. And then it's, you know, I think it's a tool that when deployed well, it can bring great benefit. But when deployed in a malevolent way, then it can do great harm. And so I think that's the case of any revolution in the past and any tool that's in front of us is how do we deploy it effectively? And hopefully we all are choosing to be kind as we do. All right. Well, Adam, Isfan, we're coming up on the hour. I want to make sure you have a moment to just share any other words of wisdom or advice or recommendations you have for anyone listening, building their careers, building a company that you want to take with them today.
Please start something. If you have a job and you're working full time, de-risk. Start a side hustle because your job is looking to automate your ass. So start something on the side. Don't go crazy in spending, you know, $50,000, $20,000 in building something, right? Build something that people want. Get 150 customers to pay you $100 a month, whether you save them time, whether you make something easy, you can make $15,000 to $20,000 a month and have a very comfortable life. Becoming a billionaire is unlikely. Becoming a 100 millionaire is unlikely. You know, you can make a couple of $100,000 and there's no shame in making $900,000 to $500,000 or whatever it is. But, you know, figure it out. You know, put up a landing page, figure it out. That's what I have. That's my recommendation for everyone. Job, no job, whatever you're doing, start using these AI tools ASAP. And start building to de-risk from your full-time employment.
Love it. It's fun.
Work out, smell some flowers. That's it.
I think that's what the kids these days are calling go touch grass, right? Like get involved in nature. I love it. It's awesome. All right. Well, thank you both for joining today. It's been a lot of fun to chat about AI and innovation and what's going on as we, you know, enter the future. So thank you for both sharing your stories, your careers, your experiences, and your advice. This has been a lot of fun. If anyone wants to follow up with you, where can they go to learn more about FlySwiftTail and engage with you both further?
They could email us or they could just check out the site. FlySwiftTail.com or email contact@flyswifttail.com. If they're a broker and they want to sign up for the booking engine demo that Isfan is completing soon, we're offering brokers a trial. Like we want to work with like 50 brokers to help us tweak the product for their needs. And eventually we're going to start charging them, but we don't know what yet.
Great. It's fine. You said you're active on socials, so no bots, but.
I hope that doesn't mean.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks, y'all. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you to everyone listening. And with that, take care. Bye.
That's it for today. If this was valuable, subscribe so you don't miss the next one. Want more? Courses, consulting, and everything else at theconsultantscouncil.com. What's possible? Do more.